This is good sound waves.
Whatever sounds good.
Welcome to the Good Sound Waves podcast. This is our first episode of our new video format. I'm the other guy, and today I have with me Ethan Boggs. He is the principal songwriter and the lead singer for the band Gosnick.
What's up? It's good to have you here. This is what I call the Gossiplex. This is what everyone calls the Gossiplex. This is where dreams are made of here. lived here pretty much the majority of my life. I moved in here when I was like 9 and evolved. I have a big collection of crap that I've accumulated my entire life and kind of just displayed. It looks like I'm like rolling in money, but I promise you the stuff around me is what's preventing me from having any. But yeah, it's however many years of collection and build up.
And if you were to look around the room, you would get a very musical feeling to the yes. room. Like, music definitely happens here. There's at least 3 amps that I see. And I've got one of those little MIDI keyboards too. Yeah, those things are pretty cool.
This thing is great. So, I mean, I would say the majority of songs start on that keyboard that you hear.
Now, when we're talking about songs, since we're going with the majority of songs start on a keyboard, why don't we get to know you better. We had you before for a podcast episode from the audio format.
Yes.
But unfortunately, circumstances made it where it really wasn't something we wanted to put out. It wasn't relevant. So now we're going to try and do this in this video format. And so we're going to go and talk about some of the things we did before.
Yes.
I would like to know how you got started with music. I believe you started playing bass. Can you tell me how you got into playing bass in the first place?
Well, music's kind of like been a thing in my family. My uncles have been playing like their whole life, and I guess like in the local Akron scene, they've like dipped their toes in the water in like a lot of like older like music scene, I guess, like pretty much just like cover band and everything. But I mean, they're pretty talented. My uncle himself has like his own like little amateur studio, like I do. But yeah, like, so as far as like that goes, I feel like I've always kind of grown up around like going over to my uncle's house, seeing like guitars and like Converse, and kind of like, I'd say like a slight bit of like my style came from like that, from like, oh, music is cool. And then my mom, she like was really into like gothic fashion, and the more of the music I like to listen to, like she got me into Nine Inch Nails and Stabbing Westward and all that kind of stuff. But
how did that turn into a bass?
I listened to music for a while, obviously, and I always expressed that I wanted to play an instrument. I remember really early on when I was like 8, I wanted to play drums, but I just wasn't patient enough for it, so I never did.
It's a very technical instrument.
But I kind of like didn't focus on it too much. My mom bought me a little like Toys R Us acoustic guitar, and I actually still have it. It's really beat up, and I just kind of keep it just because it's like fun, I guess. Like, it's a little memory. But I tried playing that, but again, I just wasn't patient enough as a kid. I was just like, I'm not doing this. I don't know what these strings mean. I don't know what tuning means. I thought I could just pick up and play a guitar.
I had much the same experience.
When I was 14, I got in my first relationship, and it didn't last long. I mean, it was 14. But we broke up. My little heart was broken, and it's when I started kind of getting like really like sad and like wanting to express myself. So I borrowed a guitar from my uncle, and I tried learning that, and I learned really basic stuff like Seven Nation Army and stuff like that. It was all just on the E string. I was essentially just playing bass notes on the guitar. And like, I would watch like Marty Schwartz or something like that to try to learn songs. Like, I think the first song I learned on guitar, like chords, was About a Girl by Nirvana. It was a very shitty version of it. I definitely was not playing that right. But yeah, I kept trying and trying, and it sounded like shit. But like, I would still go and people like tell people like, yeah, I'm playing guitar. I started really getting into Queen. And when that biopic came out about them, I remember seeing the scene where like John Deacon like started playing Another One Bites the Dust, and something about that clicked. I was like, you know, bass is kind of cool. I like that.
It really and drives the songs.
Yeah, and I remember that Christmas I got a bass, and I was like, that was my thing. I was like, I'm gonna learn this, and I played it all the time. It wasn't like the guitar; it was something I would pick up and just like fiddle around with and kind of learn a song. Bass was something I like sat down with and was so intrigued in and constantly wanted to like learn and make like learn new songs and all the way through and play them correctly. I really resonated with it, so I started off like kind of with that. Yeah.
Yeah. With me playing the bass, I really like it's an instrument that I can feel it because it just. I mean, my family may not like it as much when I do that, but okay. Now I'd like to talk a little bit then about how you got into actually writing songs. You said about the time you were 14 that the emotions were coming into you and it was an outlet, perhaps.
Yeah.
And so you started writing songs then. Did you make any of the songs that are now part of Gosnick's lineup?
Yeah, sort of. So when I was like, I got the bass when I was like 15, because it was like I started playing the year like right before I turned 15. So I was playing guitar when I was like 15 or 14, and then I got the bass when I like turned 15, like that Christmas or whatever. But since that was like the very end of the year, it started really taking off. And it, honestly, it wasn't even that long ago. It was 2019 is the year I actually started like playing an instrument. And that's surprising because I think a lot of people would expect someone who like makes music like, oh, I've been doing this for however many years, but it really only goes back like, soon it'll be 6 years now that I've like known how to play an instrument.
That's pretty neat.
Yeah.
Now, your first album, did you write that entirely yourself? Or I believe you had people that participated in the writing of certain parts of it. Can you tell us a little bit about how that first album came about?
Well, I had... when I got the bass and everything, I joined projects, and it was like a Gorillaz fan project. The idea behind it was we're gonna record an album in the style of Gorillaz. It's like a I'm gonna record an album in the style of Gorillaz, and it's gonna be like a kind of like fan art, but with music. And I had gone to my uncle's house because I wasn't composing anything. I was just like a bass player at that point. And I had come up with like a bass line, song structure, what I wanted to do with the song. And I kind of like gave it to him. I'm like, hey, help me record this. So we made it for this album called 5.5 for a band called Omnicord. It was all an online thing. And from then, that's when I learned about like composing, song structure, really.
Yeah.
Just really getting into how to make music, and I feel like that's definitely when it sparked. And it was only a couple months after that I was like, okay, I want to make like a solo project. Like, I want to write music. I began writing Save Rock. It was honestly like January of 2020. I started writing it, and then the first ever song written for that was I Love You. I had written the instrumental for it. The lyrics came a little bit later into production, but I had composed, written, recorded all of the all of I Love You, and then the lockdown started, and that was like, okay, well, I can't go over to my uncle's house, I can't like record stuff and have like a backbone to like show me how to record stuff. I gotta like learn how to do this like my own.
You made your own little classes.
Yeah.
Self-motivated class has to happen right here.
Yeah.
Right?
And it was just a really fast thing after that. I immediately wrote Coffee 19 because I'd lost my job. I wrote Coffee 19, which is about like the lockdowns and just COVID really. And I wrote that, and it's just like, as soon as the lockdown started, I kind of just had to force myself how to compose and write. And I would say Save Rock was like an idea like already, like I wanted to create an album, but since I was like alone with like nothing to do, I really focused like all of my time and energy into not only just creating the album, but just learning how to make music. And I would say that that album's not only just, you know, my first album, it's my introduction into anything songwriting. Like, it's
jumped right into production outright.
Yeah, and I think it's kind of crazy that I released as much as I did. I think as time goes on, I've said this one other time, but the last two songs on that album I actually, like, despise. Like, I hate those songs. And I think that's kind of something I learned the hard way, that, like, not everything you make needs to see the light of day.
And some things don't hold up as well when you hear it again and again, when you're exposed to it on video perhaps afterwards.
Yeah, I didn't even really like it before it was released, but I kind of released it because I felt like I had to. And I think a lot of that came with being new.
Fair enough. Like, the restraint comes from part of that wisdom.
I was like, well, I'm making an album. It's got to be this length. I want these songs on there. And I don't really like these songs, but I'm going to release them. So, sorry, but Goose Graveyard and 619, not a fan.
they're not a part of canon. No. They're not Gossnik canon. They were actually written off of Gossnik canon. That it's like whatever happened in that last Star Wars movie. Don't worry about it. If you didn't like it, just forget about it.
You're completely right, though. I've, like, genuinely, like, I feel like 619 I could rework, like, lyrically. I liked the idea of it, but the execution was bad. On Save Rock, I recorded the majority of everything. I completely composed, produced. I had just learned how to, like, make music, and I could not sing. I had never sang, and I actually, right before Gossnik and my first project as a bass player, I wanted to sit down and make a band with people who had also just got instruments and didn't know anything.
Yeah.
It was a shit show, but I wanted to sing, and I tried singing. I tried singing Roulette by System of a Down, and I listened to the playback of my voice, and I was like, oh no, I can't sing. So I at that time, I accepted defeat, and I was like, for this first album, it's not my strong point. I'm going to outsource vocalists. So what I would do is I would reach out to vocalists. I would pay them, like, an upfront amount. They would sing the songs, a lot of them, like, with Tommy Temp, who sang on, like, the original Irreversible Sin and I Love You, Blue Light. He was really cool because he definitely deserves credit with, like, some of the ad-libbing and, like, certain things. Like, he was really cool and, like, worked really well with, like, the material I gave him, and he really, like, brought those songs
to life. So
he
actually added some of the character to it.
So, like, I can't, like, take full credit for, like, that kind of stuff. But, I mean, he, like, essentially, yes, I also wasn't really great at guitar still then. So, another thing on that album that isn't really me, I would say, like, almost all, like, 99% of the guitars are of Alex Hamilton from the band Wasmo, who also does vocals on two or three of the tracks in that album. So, yeah.
Now, since then, this first one, you know, you produced it, you wrote it, you directed it, you know. For your follow-up album, this is the one that we had the live show for the release party. What an eventful night that was. And can we talk a little bit about how that album came out?
Yeah. I feel like I had an idea after Save Rock. I was like, it released. I felt good about myself. And I was like, okay, well, I want to kind of move on to bigger things. And I think at that point, I had actually, like, got my license. And I was driving, and I was listening to a lot of, like, Green Day, like, old school Green Day and old school AFI.
Yes.
And I was just singing my little heart out to these songs. And I think it was like, not only I taught myself how to sing just from being a goober in my car. And I was sitting there, I was like, wait a second, I feel like I can sing. I gotta know my strengths and my weaknesses.
Right, know what your range is and know how you can push yourself. Because if you push yourself too hard, all of a sudden the most obnoxious sounds come out.
I tried to go for deep Serge Tankian vocals, and then as soon as it didn't work, I was like, well, I can't sing. The thing is, my voice is really high pitched, especially when I sing, and that's something I didn't realize right away because I didn't ever try those vocals. So when I'm trying to bellow out, like, Davey Havoc, like Today's Lesson or Single Second, I'm blasting that shit out, and I'm, like, listening back to it, I'm like, okay, this sounds pretty good. Like, I've got to pat myself on the back a little bit. Like,
yeah, you find with your voice, it's just another instrument.
Yeah.
And you've got to be, you're the key that you can sing and it's got to fit with the song that's being played. And I've learned from doing karaoke that you can go and pitch up and pitch down songs to make somebody actually fit like the song is meant for them. Whereas, so when you're just doing a song, doing it true to the original music, then you're really relying on that fitting within your capabilities in the first place.
I'm really glad, because obviously, like, I knew Gosnick wasn't going to be like a one-time album. Like, that was always just like going to be the stepping stone of what was to come. I feel like after Save Rock, I was a little burnt out, but I had this idea, since there were like, I think, 9 total vocalists featured on that album, or collaborators. I was like, before I jump into writing a new album, I'm going to make one song where I have all of the collaborators from Save Rock come in, and it's going to be this insane song with like 10 different people doing vocals on it. And that song was Rock is Dead, the single, and I worked on it for months and months, and I put a lot of money into getting all the like features on there and a lot of different things. Like, I feel like that was a huge stepping stone, because I purposely, at the end of that song, my vocals come in, and it was a perfect transition from the album title Save Rock, and then the like follow-up single was Rock is Dead. It was kind of shutting down that era of what you kind of knew from Gosnick already going forward.
This is your metamorphosis into the next stage.
Yeah, it was kind of all planned. It was a big setup. Like, so like, my voice was kind of like the last thing you heard in that song. It was like kind of creeping in, because there's more backing vocals than anything. But I was like, this is what's coming. Like, this, having everyone sing Rock is Dead was like the end to like the collaborative like process with like vocalists and stuff. And even just the message going forward, I was like, that's like the perfect send off to like that and what was coming forward.
So. And then your second track then features your vocals.
Yeah. It was released as a single, and that was released for like a couple of years. And I think in the meantime, I worked. I knew that I couldn't promote myself too well, because I was kind of just releasing music and just shooting it out there on the internet and hoping people would find it. And I had it ranged like in success. Like, I had like, there's even people now that like support us and everything that found us in those, or like, or I guess to like found me in those very early days where I was just releasing stuff and like throwing out like Instagram ads, like, please listen to my music. Right. And, but for the most part, you know, like, nobody knew what a Gosnick was. And I always wanted to play shows. I had never played a show on a stage before. And I knew that I would have to like outsource and get like a live band. I tested with like playing bass and singing with like backing tracks.
It's very difficult to sing and play bass, because bass seems to be like you have to be so right where you need to be.
For me,
I feel like it's an impossibility, though there are artists out there that prove me otherwise.
Mm-hmm. I still try, and it's definitely, on some songs, it's very goofy. But no, I kind of like learned, like, I kind of accepted that. I was like, okay, I think Gosnick needs to kind of evolve beyond me a little bit more, because I always went into it thinking it was like strictly a solo project. Which it really isn't anymore. And I think like I began writing songs for Pretty. I was writing like this early on in like early 2022. I was writing like End It All off of Pretty. End It All in Purgatory.
Okay.
And then the second song I think I ever started like writing lyrically was I Feel Nothing. I also, going into the album, I took everything I learned what not to do on Save Rock, and I applied that to Pretty.
Okay.
I think with Save Rock, I would record a bunch of instrumentals that sounded cool, and then I was like, okay, and then I'll write the lyrics for it. But the thing is, I would be sitting on these instrumentals for like a year, and I'd be like, I can't write lyrics for this. I don't even care about this song anymore.
Well, your words that come out have to be hitting those notes, of, you know, that to follow the melody of it, and it has to be meaningful.
So like, with Pretty, I mean, I think there was a couple exceptions, like, I would start a song like instrumentally, but I would very quickly write lyrics for. So for the production of Pretty, I would start off always writing lyrics. That way they were a lot more meaningful, and I wouldn't have songs like Goose Graveyard and 619. So like, I applied those things, and I think it really worked in the favor of the album.
Yeah.
But I was writing those songs, I had met members from from the live band through co-workers. Mm-hmm. I moved on. I started asking a bunch of people, kind of throwing stuff to the wall and hoping something would stick. And a lot of people turned me down, I don't want to do this. Or they would come over and try, and then I would learn, this is a classical guitarist, and I'm asking them to play punk rock music.
Right, you got somebody playing flamenco, and what you really need is some metal.
Pretty much. Mm-hmm. But I found the right people at the right time, and we formed, the live band, and I would say it was the very end of 2022. It was October of 2022 is when we started establishing ourselves, actually to a more public, eye, as a band. Because I think it's a lot easier of a sell to play a live show and this is the band Gossenick, and not listen to this track. It's by this person who makes music, but she doesn't play live shows, but it's this and this, and it's more of a DJ.
It's more truth in advertising with your second release.
Yeah, and on top of wanting to have a live band and play shows, it just is what felt right. So we had the people join the band for Pretty. I still did. I did all of the writing. I think the thing is I wanted people to be more have more creative input. Mm-hmm. But by the time we started establishing ourselves as a band, the album lyrically and instrumentally was at least written was almost completely wrapped up, and it got to this point where I was Hank would pitch a song and it sounded awesome, and there's still stuff that we're gonna release sooner rather than later, but they were originally pitched for Pretty, and you would listen to the songs and it seemed so much work needed to be put into it while we already had 12 different songs open that we needed to finish.
Okay.
So I feel we kind of put anything else on the back burner and kind of it was solely, I did a lot of what was on Pretty. I recorded a lot of it. The thing is too, I would just sit down and record something before I even assembled the live band or even after. And then I would go and show it to them hey, this is a new song we have. I remember Blood being one of those things that I wrote morning of. I had the lyrics ready, and then I came over here, I sat down, I recorded the instrumental and recorded the lyrics and made a demo, which is now actually released as Blood, single version on the deluxe album. So right. That was the original Blood that you would have heard had Gossenick not been evolved as live band kind
right.
of. But yeah, I showed it to everyone, and it was an instant success. I remember I sent it to Charlotte, and she listened to it, and she was "I'm not gonna lie, that's the best song you've ever made." And I was "Really?" And I think it was it's a very catchy song.
It's easy for the band, sort of like we're talking about with Queen, right?
Yeah.
It grabs you, and you just want to be part of what's happening.
It's very simple. It's two notes the entire song. I mean, it's mainly one note, but you got a G chord in there in the chorus. It's very simple, but easy to learn. We were having band practice that night. I recorded it in the morning, went to band practice, and it was just a success. Everyone started learning it. We started playing it, and it was just really fun. And it was one of those things that we played it live for so long before the album was even out that it kind of evolved into a different sound, to where we were okay, we should go to a studio and record this the way people are used to hearing it right. at this point. It wouldn't make sense to play it one live for one way live for many years like we were doing, and then go and release it and it sound nothing like how
right.
we would play it.
Instead of having all the different guitars, you might have some other electronic type of effects that suit the purpose, but it's a different feeling.
There was a little synth in the original one that it was a lot slower tempo. Just the lyrically, I really like the original Blood. That's why I included it in the deluxe album, and I think it's kind of cool to add in there, because I'm in a bizarre world, this is the Blood that everyone would have listened to anyway. So it's fun though. But I kind of wrote Pretty at a very vulnerable time. I started writing it when it was very there was a lot of shit going on, and I started writing that long before the band started, and then went on. It began production in early 2022, and it went on. We got the band together end of 2022, and then in 2023, that's when it, like, perfectly lined up, and it was like, okay, we're making an album.
Like, see, I'd like to know now your release strategy. Now, a lot of bands these days, they're not putting out an album per mm-hmm. se. They'll put out single after single after single, and then once they've got 10 singles out, that they'll go ahead and make that into an album or something to that effect. With the way that people consume music these days, how has that affected your releases, your release strategies?
You know, it's very interesting because with Save Rock, I didn't know what I was doing the whole time. I was kind of just like doing things, not knowing how it worked. I was learning. I released 4 singles for Save Rock before it came out. I originally wanted to jump the gun and just release I Love You back in like March of 2020, but that was before any other tracks were done, and I had to like restrain myself because I was like, I don't want to release a single for something I want to put on an album and the album not come out.
Right, because if it's too separated from it, it feels like there's no continuity, perhaps.
And I also kind of did the thing to where I was a lot more open about it. As soon as I like began production, I was like, hey, I'm working on this album. Stay tuned for that. And I think that was something with Pretty. I was a lot more... people knew we were working on an album, but as far as like the album cover, the album name, all the songs on it, that was kept secret for a long time up until we finally released Blood. But essentially what I do with releases is I originally released 4 singles and then for Save Rock, and then about... they were spaced out, and then about 4 to 5 months, half a year probably, actually, now that I think about it, the album was released. That, since there was no real eyes on Gosnick, it had varying levels of like streams, kind of. It wasn't like the best.
Right, you didn't have people that were looking for you yet.
Yeah.
And you haven't had enough playing from people that have seen you yet to go ahead and get the algorithm to care about you.
Yeah. I went on and I recorded Save Rock, which was just going to be a single not tied to an album. And that song, even now, is like one of our most streamed songs. And I've learned that with the way people release music, that singles, no matter if they're tied to an album or what, they tend to do a lot better than any song. Like, The Blue Light, for instance, that is one of my favorite songs of Gosnick.
You know it is my favorite song, without a doubt.
I love the original, and I love the remake for Pretty.
And I love the live version.
Yeah, I really like that song. However, when it comes to like numbers, it seems to be not that streamed. And then you compare it to another song that's like kind of something I don't like as much as The Blue Light, but was released as a single for like Save Rock or something. It has more streams. And I've learned that when you're releasing a single, people are kind of expecting you as the artist as that being your like showcase of your best work.
Yeah.
Which you always kind of want your singles to be that way. For Pretty, we had been playing our songs live for like over a year at that point. We had played Blood at every single show we had ever done. So people were really anticipating the release of Blood.
Yeah.
So with Blood, I was able to just release it after the whole album was done. I knew that like we were going to be putting the stuff out and we can finally talk about it. We hyped up something. We didn't say anything. We're just like, there's a countdown and it's 1 week from now.
You guys have been doing a lot of fun kind of like baiting people in kind of stuff. There's no extra track at the end. There's no hidden track. Just for the record, there's no hidden track. But if you look for it, you might find one, but there's not one.
There's no hidden track on Pretty.
Yes.
But yeah, so with Blood, we did like an ominous like week countdown. And then I forget, it was sometime in like late December, we released the track. And then it's like soon as Blood hit like midnight on streaming, we posted everywhere about the new album. It was a huge success because they knew we were working on something, they wanted to hear Blood. So this song just came out that was really anticipated and people were really hyping up the release for Blood. And for Pretty, we had announced the album and I was kind of like doing this like teasing thing since the album was going to be set to release in February. I didn't feel like releasing too many singles beforehand.
Right.
Just because it was too soon. And I knew that, I don't know, I just felt like the right thing to do. Mm-hmm. So what I did was I released Sleep in January of that year, like a month before the album came out.
And another one of my favorite live songs.
It's one of my, as of right now, with released songs, I think Sleep is my all-time favorite gospel track.
When you guys did the Good Soundwave Sessions episode, where you guys brought your whole band down into my little music room, that was the first time I was exposed to Sleep.
Yeah.
And I just, I played that video frequently.
It was, that was it. Sleep, we didn't play as long as Blood. We debuted that, I mean, still months before it was released, probably half a year, but we played that first time in like May of 2023. Mm-hmm. Compared to it was like Blood, we've been playing that like every show, but it was a huge hit. Like it was also another song like I had recorded and completed entirely, and then we started playing it live around like after the time it was recorded. Mm-hmm. And I think it was another hit, like not so much as Blood, but people, it was a crowd pleaser. And I was really proud of that, because recording and studio and lyrically and everything about that song was something I was really, really proud of. So that was definitely my, like, I knew Blood was going to be a big hit. That was, like, right, the most hyped song, which, like, I think for good reason. But Sleep was, like, that's the second single for sure. Like, it needs to be.
Yeah, like, in the old days when it would be a cassette single, I would hope the blue light would be on one side and Sleep would be the other, and neither one would be the B-side.
Yeah. Bands, I feel like there's things smaller bands can do and get away with, and then there's things bigger bands can do and get away with. And I'd like to talk about that for a second.
Oh, fantastic.
Because I feel like big bands can release a couple singles to get hype for an album, and then after the album, they kind of get to see what songs are performing the best and what song they would like to make a single afterwards. Mm-hmm. And typically they'll release a single accompanied by like a music video or something special, mm-hmm, new, or they'll go on a tour and they'll call it like the whatever tour. And
they'll be able to look at their
name,
metrics, and they'll know which one to focus on.
With smaller bands, it's harder to do, especially if you don't have a big budget for a music video or anything. Mm-hmm. I always liked the song I Feel Nothing. And I knew that that was going to be a big song on top of, like, Sleep and Blood. But I didn't want to release it as a single before the album. Because from my point of view, we had played a lot of the songs off of Pretty live for a while before the album came out. We saved some for the day of the release of the show. Like, three songs had never been played
before. Just hold something back.
Yeah, so people at least heard a lot of these songs live a pretty decent amount of times. So I Feel Nothing was one of those songs we started playing early on. I think it debuted the same day as Sleep, actually, like live. But what I didn't want to do was, since Blood and Sleep were already out, and then Irreversible Sin and The Blue Light were on the previous albums, those are four songs people already heard. And I didn't want to oversaturate it with people already hearing pretty much half the album by releasing I Feel Nothing as a single before the album came out.
Right.
So I wanted to kind of keep it special, and I always had plans to do something with I Feel Nothing, and they never really followed through until recently. This very mysterious version of I Feel Nothing, labeled the 30-year anniversary, is dropped, and I have no fucking clue where that came from.
Right, right. No clue, huh?
There's this fucking weird video on our YouTube,
you know,
called A Message.
It's that multiverse thing.
It's fucking weird. I'm still like, it makes little sense to me now, but the song I Feel Nothing 1994 apparently is from 1994, and I'm just as confused as you guys. It's fucking weird.
I'm still waiting for them to air your Family Guy episodes, because I've seen all the trailers and they just won't put it out there.
Well, it's been an emotional roller coaster. Seth MacFarlane, I mean, he dropped out of Family Guy for a while. It's just a fucking mess of releases, but we're still working on that Family Guy clip.
Fantastic. let's talk about what you're doing now, because we've already had your second album come out. You've gone and performed one hell of a live show for the release party. And now, aside from going out and performing the songs, are you working on the next album? Are you continuing forward? Because You've got Hank Waite in there with his songs that fit on an album that it sounds like it might fit on, but you also have, I'm sure, more coming out of yourself. Yeah. Just, I don't know how it sounds. you have more that you've been working on yourself, I'm sure.
Yeah. I feel like, so at the end of that video on YouTube, there was a little thing that said 2025, and like, obviously, like, bands say all the time, like, oh, there's big things coming soon, and it's always just music. Like, you did that the last time, you released music, that's not big things.
Yeah, I've seen memes of that sort.
With Gosnick, though, I will say that I think we've done this long enough to kind of get into a groove of, we're always thinking ahead. And I can definitely tell you things that are coming, and things give you kind of like a first, like, kind of little hint at what those things might be. But I'm very, very excited. I think, so, like, first of all, I started Save Rock. I straight up admitted I didn't know what I was doing. I mean, I knew the kind of music I wanted to make. I know the kind of imagery and message I wanted to put into it, but I had no plan ahead of what was after, besides like Save Rock the sing, or Rock is Dead the single, and I released that and then set it up. And I think ever since then I've been trying to look forward to what's next and the message I want to convey. I think with Save Rock and then Rock is Dead after, there was a constant message of like, don't worship celebrities, don't idolize people that shouldn't be idolized. I think one thing with Rock is Dead is I was really upset by a lot of the artists I was listening to. They were starting to just, it seemed like everyone was disappointing me in one way or another, and doing just, it, everyone just kind of like let me down in a way. And I was like, what is with these people I like to look up to and think are good people that all of a sudden come out and there's shit about them, or they're not as great as what you would expect them to be.
And it's people left and right, mm-hmm. it seems like, are coming out as having this other persona that we... And I don't want to go too much into who they are. You guys all get the scrolling infinite feed. But I definitely see a lot of celebrity figures that we would maybe think were like beyond reproach.
You can't escape that. I mean, no matter where you are, there's going to be anything within like your circle or celebrities, because celebrities aren't perfect people. And I think we build a very... parasocial relationship with people we want to look up to, and as soon as something comes out to where they're not all sunshine and rainbows, it kind of hurts pretty bad. And that was a lot what Rock is Dead was about. And I will say with Pretty, I feel like since that was our first time in the spotlight, and like, oh, like, we got a lot of support really quick, and it was a really good feeling. But I gotta say, I think, including myself, it got to people's heads, and it kind of like, it just spiraled out of control. And I think that's something, stepping back looking at, I'm like, look where I was like three years ago almost. I was kind of like, I probably would have made fun of myself now. So going forward, it's more of a, you're gonna see a lot of that original message returning of like, I don't know, more of like separating the ego and the character from the message, and kind of, it's gonna be a lot of cool things coming that are gonna be surrounded outside of the music, things happening on stage and off stage that you're gonna see, and it's going to be very mysterious, and it might not make a whole lot of sense at first, but we know what we're doing.
This is a cryptic band, in case you don't know. If you haven't been following along, these guys know how to go and like lead you along to what they're trying to reveal. So all I can tell you is it's probably something pretty neat coming up.
Yeah, we've got some cool shit. I will say that we're looking into a show sometime in January, and I'm going to start promoting the shit out of that. And there's going to be a reason that show is very heavily promoted, so you don't really want to miss what we have planned and what we have going on. We're definitely working on new music, though. I think as far as like releasing singles and stuff, I think we're just going to release some singles, not tied to an album or anything. We're just going to have fun.
Just free, individual, stand on its own.
And then on top of that, we have not an album, but an EP.
Nice.
And this isn't even something like, we're working on it. It's almost done. Like, I'm just waiting for things to be put in motion where I can show people.
Right, you're just eagerly anticipating the next step, and maybe, just maybe, we might hear Hank's EP come out one day. I'm just kidding.
You joke about it.
Just call it the Hank. That would be great.
You joke about it, but we've talked about it. Just putting that out there.
Fantastic.
I don't know. I'm excited. I'm really excited about... I feel like as soon as we wrapped up production, like music-wise, of Pretty in October of last year. So about a year ago now from the time recording this. And it wasn't like a thing like we took a break on or anything. We like took time to ourselves to like stop making music. I mean, we did, but we didn't. And it was right when production of Pretty wrapped up, I got the idea for what we're working on now.
Fantastic.
And that is like, as of right now, it's like 95% done.
Right.
And
on.
We're working on it, and it's going to come out next year. I won't say when, but it's going to come out in 2025.
Awesome.
And it's just like, it's been a nonstop go, go, go. Like, we're creating stuff, and it's going to sound so much better than what you even know on Pretty.
As a fan of the band and of your music, I can say that I'm definitely looking forward to what's coming out. And I imagine quite a few of your existing fans are. And your base seems to be growing regularly.
Yeah.
I want to thank you very much for taking some time to sit down with me and talk about your music and your experience.
Well, thank you for having me.
And if you'd like to learn more about the band, you can find them on all the social medias. And I believe gosinick.com. GOSINICC.
Yeah. I don't know if the website's like up and running right now, but yeah, I would just check out the socials. We started making YouTube videos, more of like vlogs and fun stuff like that, so you can check that out. But I would say in between, maybe keep an eye out on some of the other stuff we have releasing.
And if you need help finding where to get them online, if you go to Good Sound Waves, check out our band's page, and Gosnick's listed there with links to all of their stuff that I've been able to find so far. So again, thank you so much for being a part of today's show, our very first video version of the podcast.
It's an honor.
Those of you that are listening to us on Spotify or Amazon Music, you don't know what you're missing out on. He's a very delightful individual.
Yes, check out Good Sound Waves. They're very cool. What other guys doing and what Good Sound Waves is doing, they're a godsend, and Gosnick condones and supports everything Good Sound Waves is doing.
Save rock and roll, man. Thanks again.
Thank you.
Good Sound Waves.
Whatever sounds good.